Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're also looking for those new ways of living. And we are here Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on the radio broadcast. And then the podcasts, they are available on the homepage at richarddugan.com, as well as the radio shows page, and SoundCloud, and iTunes, and TuneIn Radio, and Spotify, and Stitcher. And hopefully we'll add to that in the 2019 year. Looking forward to a fantastic 2019 just underway, and we are so thankful and grateful for you. And you know, you may want to go to our guest's website, and we'll be giving you that website shortly so that you can continue your evolutionary process. And if you would like to join us in our evolutionary process, we would greatly appreciate any support you can give us. We do have a PayPal account that allows you to support us financially. Just click on it, go there, give what you can. And we thank you in advance, and we thank you for energetic support as well. So with all of that said, today we're going to be talking with the author of a book whose title I'm actually going to, I'm not stealing the title, but I'm going to steal the word for the metaphor that I often use when talking about sharing messages, as I've often said of James Redfield's Celestine Prophecy, where he speaks about sharing messages with one another so that we each as individuals can continue to put the puzzle pieces, if you will, or the pieces into the mosaic of our individual lives that's part of the grand mosaic. The title of the book is The Mosaic, and Daniel Bruce Levin is my guest. And Danny, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's great to have you with us.
What an honor. What you are doing on your show and what I am doing in the work that I'm doing and through the book that I'm doing of listening and having the vehicle to allow people to tell their stories is so simpatico that I was thrilled when I had the opportunity to be on your show.
Well, I have to tell you that one of the things that's so fascinating to me, as I mentioned, you know, we're looking for those new ways of living. But it isn't just the new ways of living, it's also the new ways of thinking. And one of them, it's very interesting, and of course we're going to get into in depth into this as well, is that that great line, and I've quoted it, I don't think I've ever misrepresented it, but maybe misquoted it. And that's from Albert Einstein, who said that at this time that no problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. And what really comes to mind is the institutions that we have in our world today, whether they be religious, economic, educational, political. It doesn't really matter what the institution is. They're still trying to solve the problems of today with the solutions of yesterday. And a case in point, when we went through that economic downturn, which I'm sure you're familiar with in 2008-09,
sure.
I remember hearing these two phrases. Number one, we've never been here before. So in other words, this was whole new territory. We don't have any solutions. And then they started using the solutions that they used in the past to solve the problems that were before us in the area of never having been there before. And I thought, you're idiots. You're going to take us down the same road in maybe a decade that we're in right now, that we were in, what was it? Didn't we have a little downturn back in the, early 90s, something like that? And then we had another one in the 80s and then the 70s. It's like every 10 years we seem to...
How about the 40s?
And the 40s and the 30s. Yeah. I mean, my father was a child of the Depression. He was born in 31.
Yeah.
And my mother in 35. And so they went through that. But this is one of the things that you talk about, not only in your book, but also in the work that you do, in the travels, in the speeches, in the meeting of different people, is that we have to not only, I'm going to use two metaphors here, we not only have to think outside the box, we've got to get rid of the box And we also have to think outside the nine dots. So let's start there as far as coming up with, I don't know if you have a new metaphor. And again, I love the title of the book and the imagery, the beautiful cover, the flip cover here.
Thank you.
Of the mosaic. But tell us a little bit about this aspect of coming up with some new metaphor that will help us to maybe even challenge us to and force us to think totally. Some would say, you're absolutely crazy. That'll never work. And yet, hey, we sent a man to the moon, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I get told that all the time. So when people tell me I'm crazy, I think that I'm on the right track.
There you are.
Okay, so I'm right with you. If you think about the evolution of how we've come as a society and as even as individuals, because even though we're talking about organizations, we're individuals create organizations, and it's each of us as an individual has those same organizational thoughts that we think of. We live in conflict most of our time. We live in a siloed thinking world. And years ago, when I started doing this work that I was doing, I was a lone voice in the wilderness. I was one wolf crying on the hilltop, ow, right? And it was hard to get heard, right?
I like that.
And so the beauty of what happened during that period of time is we started to create like-minded communities. Like-minded communities brought together people who thought similarly, and we were no longer lone wolves on a mountaintop, but we were a pack of wolves, and our voices spread exponentially further and further and further. But in everything, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you read the book, one of the things that the traveler tells the main character, Mo, is everything in the world has three things, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And each of them having tremendous value, and letting go of each of them have tremendous value. And I believe the time has come for us to disrupt like-minded communities, to get away from silo thinking. Because everywhere we look, it's this side talking about that side. And what's happening is our silos are getting bigger and stronger, and the gaps between them are getting wider and deeper. Mm. And what really is becoming more and more the reality of our life is that we are living a disconnected, divided reality. If you look at the United States right now, we're not the United States of America, we're the divided states of America. Mm-hmm. And you even see it geographically, the blue states are on the coast and the red states are the whole part in between, right?
Yeah.
But we are not a divided nation. We are not divided people. If you go beneath the surface superficial differences of what we all want the same thing. We all want to be loved and respected. We all want to be heard and understood and validated. We don't necessarily need to be agreed with. We just need our points to be heard. But conversations now are not conversations anymore. They're shout-outs. Mm-hmm. There's one person shouting over another person, shouting over another person, shouting over another. And listening has all but died.
Yeah.
So the new modality, the new paradigm that I see happening is not one of vertical relationships where there are people of power telling us what to do. But the new paradigm is a mosaic where all the pieces come together, and their voices, when we listen to them together, create things that are far more beautiful, far more powerful, far more capable.
Yeah.
Than any individual can do.
You know, there's a line from a song by John Denver that says, it's all of us or none.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things, too, as you share this, is that I have worked for 40 years in this industry, and I have worked for, strangely enough, I've actually worked for neutral stations, but I've also worked for liberal as well as conservative stations. Have no use for any of these people because of that very reason, because nobody is willing to somehow come to a middle ground and say, you know what, let's do what's best for the people. They're more interested in dealing with saving their party or whatever their institution is, that their ox that's being gored, if you will. And I just find that really unfortunate, because we all lose in the process. I don't know about you, Danny, but the thing that really gets me is the loss of life. And the and the first thing I think about in that regard is the lost potential, the contributions. What would that person have been able to provide and give to our civilization and our society if they had lived, whether they died in a military conflict, a mass shooting, dying early in life of cancer, some other disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I, you know, again, there are all kinds of metaphysical aspects to all of this as well. You know, some would say, well, you know, but they were here, they contributed, and then they left. All right, I can certainly appreciate that because nothing lasts forever. You know, as my father often, and I quote him quite often on this program, said, eat, drink, and be merry in moderation because nobody gets out of this world alive. And
I love that.
And the fact of the matter is some of us leave earlier and some of us leave later. Just, you know, I mean, we get a round trip ticket. We just don't know when the departure is.
Yeah.
You know.
So I have some different slants on that.
Please.
Go right ahead. And part of my work is I disrupt the way people think. And it's not with the thought of I'm better or I'm right or you're wrong. I just like to question. Vistage has a great saying when they train their coaches. They say, you come to us and think we're going to give you answer. And you come to us thinking we're going to answer your questions. What we're actually going to do is question your answers. And what that allows you to do is find that space behind what you actually think to think if there's something underneath that that's actually stronger. If I can share with you a very personal story.
Please.
I have the honor of having a 29-year-old developmentally delayed daughter. She doesn't speak like you and I speak. She never has. She never was able to. And her communication almost is like someone who's had a stroke, but worse. And so over the years, I've grown to get to know her a lot because she and I are super, super close, and I love her so much. But there were many years where I couldn't understand the thing she was saying. And you can only imagine she would try and say something and then I didn't understand it. So she would say it louder and scream it. And then I didn't understand it. And she would throw a tantrum. And then I didn't understand that still. And then she would try and come running at me and bite me and destroy something. Finally, I realized that every person that I meet in the world, every government person that I've worked with, every CEO of a company, every company that I've worked with, every family that I've worked with, they all operate in the same paradigm. If they speak and they don't get heard, they yell. If they yell and they don't get heard, they create a scene. And if they create a scene and they don't get heard, they try and destroy. And that could be a political initiative, that could be a building if you're a terrorist, that could be a marriage if you're in an unhappy marriage and you're not getting heard, that could be a business deal, it could be whatever it is, but the same paradigm basically exists. So the question I would ask, and the thing that I would really invite people to do in this show, if they feel anything from what's happening, because nothing matters unless we're connected to each other and we feel something from each other, is to start to question our belief systems. Because our belief systems, if they put us on the side that's right and others on the side that's wrong, guaranteed our belief systems are off. Because everything that happens to open up something for us, even our own inner dialogue, even the political conflict that's going on in the world. When people are listened to and validated and understood, they don't need to yell and fight and destroy. They just feel heard. And you notice, I didn't say that people want to be agreed with. We don't have to agree with each other. But if you and I disagree, but you know that I've heard you and I validate you and I understand you and I accept that that's what you believe, I don't believe if you're going to blow up a building, you're going to blow up my building.
You know, when 9/11 happened,
yep.
Okay, two thoughts came to mind. As I'm watching the images on the television, one of the first was, wow, Hollywood, what a great job they did of creating the CGI and all of this stuff. And I know there are all kinds of conspiracy theorists who say that's what it was. But anyway, but then the second thought was, once they had claimed that we knew who was responsible, my next thought was, over the next 10 years, Has anybody bothered to sit down and talk with any of these people to find out why, folks, I'm going to use this language, why they are so pissed off?
Right.
Why are they so angry that they feel that this is the way to go? Or any other group that has whatever beliefs they have that feel they are justified in these kinds of destructive activities. But nobody has ever sat down. They have hearsay. They have, you know, whatever's up on a website that is usually designed to inflame, et cetera, et cetera. And again, I'm not talking specifically about any group at this point. But that's one of the things that I've always found so fascinating and frustrating, yep, as I'm sure you as well, is that when there are these kinds of conflicts, nobody wants to sit down and say, what seems to be the problem? You know, I'm not saying we can work it out, but, you know, can I at least help me to understand why?
So I want to be a fisherman here, because you have a big fish on the end of your line. And I want to reel that back in, not to what the terrorists were thinking about in 9/11, mm-hmm, that made them do that, although I think that's an incredibly valuable perspective. I want to think about what is the perspective that I go into when I have a disagreement with my wife. What's the perspective that I go into when I try and destroy an initiative that my company or people in my company are doing? Mm-hmm. What's my perspective when I stand on a street corner and yell about anti-Trump or pro-Trump, whatever the discussion is? Mm-hmm. What is my perspective? Because, look, we can point our fingers all the time at the world outside of us, but the world outside of us is really a reflection of the world inside of us. We are a mosaic. Mm-hmm. We are all connected. We are a part of the same reality. And so what's happening inside of us is happening outside of us. And the new paradigm shift, to tie a pretty little bow around this conversation, is when we realize that the lie is a lie and it's not the truth. The lie has become so easy to believe we call it the truth. And the truth has become so hard to believe we call it a lie. Mm. And the truth is that we are connected. We are not separate.
Yes.
But we look at this world and we say, oh, come on, how are we connected? You're over there, I'm over here. I live in this body, you live in that body. You believe this, you're on that side of the border. Your skin color is this color. You're a man, I'm a woman. You're a this, that. Underneath it all, science is leading the discussion in metaphysics by telling us through quantum physics that every single one of us is made up of energy. And the energy that goes, that I'm inhaling right now, you just exhale, because it travels at speeds of that we don't even know. So right now, at the same moment, I'm connecting to the force and the power that gave Mahatma Gandhi the creation of a nonviolent revolution. But at the same time, I'm inhaling the force that created the destruction of Hitler. Mm-hmm. And so what do I connect to? When we stop putting the thoughts out here of why are they doing that, mm-hmm, and start asking the question, why am I doing this? Where is the divisiveness? Where is the disconnection in me? How do I connect? The mosaics taught me four basic points, and they're really beautiful. There are four connections that we have that exist at all times. We have a connection to ourself. We have a connection to something bigger than ourselves. I call it source. I call it God. But you can call it whatever you want, even if you just call it something bigger than yourself. We have a connection to the purpose of why we're here. And then we have a connection to each other. Mm. When we're missing any of those three connections and we try to connect to each other, we're either having connections that are less vital than what they can. Yeah. We spend all of our time outside of ourselves thinking about what they are doing, and very little time inside of ourselves thinking about what we're doing.
Yeah. There's a phrase I came up with many, many years ago after doing a few years of interviews, as well as living the life that I lived as a child and a teenager and a young adult. And the phrase was, if there is a difference that makes a difference, there is a difference. Mm. However, if there is a difference that makes no difference, there is no difference. Now, granted, that is dealing more with the outside world rather than my internal life. But I think for me, it has helped me to better understand that as long as I see that there's a difference, then there's, in my mind, there's separation. Mm-hmm. In spite of the fact that I know on a metaphysical level, I don't care what I think, I'm connected.
Right.
No matter what I say, I'm connected. And right. I think that what you're talking about, that first of 4 points, is being connected to self, being aware of self. If and that's one of the things we talk a lot about on this program is going within. There's a wonderful poem by Tiberius. That's the last name of the author. Basically, it's a poem that deals with the gods, and they're a little concerned that man is starting to wake up and he's starting to understand. And if they don't hide the truth from man, they're gonna rise up and be like us. So we better find a place to hide the truth. So they start talking, and we'll hide it on a mountaintop. No, he'll find a way to climb that. Well, we'll hide it in the depths of the ocean. No, he'll find a way to get down there too. We'll hide it here. We'll hide it there. We'll hide it everywhere. Finally, one speaks up and says, I know where we'll hide it. We'll hide it in his heart. He'll never look there.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to look and start. And that's what you're talking about. And Source then can help us to do that, can't it?
Totally. But one thing, each of the four connections actually has a practice that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. I want to get into those practices when we get back. Can we do that?
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation here. If you've just joined us, I am talking with the author of The Mosaic, Daniel Bruce Levin. He is my guest. The website for those of you who would like to continue your evolutionary process, the website is danielbrucelevin.com, DanielBruceLevin. Don't worry about it. We'll be linked to it. So you just click and away you go. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Don't go away.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Daniel Bruce Levin. Danny, I thank you so much for staying with us here in the second half of our broadcast. And before we continue on, let's give out that website, danielbrucelevin.com, so that folks can check out not only you, The Mosaic, your website. This is a neat little book of fiction, but it's filled with wisdom that I think is going to help a lot of folks. Love the way it's broken down. And then it's actually put together as I look through it. It's almost in, I guess you'd call it poetic paragraphs, so to speak. I never really took poetry in school, but this is just a fascinating work that I think people should pick up. It's not a big book, and so don't worry about it. Just pick it up and start, and away you go. Be kind to yourself. Be vulnerable. Do what you came to do. And build your mosaic. And that's what we're here to help you do, folks. So, Danny, before we went to break, we were talking about those four points of connection, if you will, a self and a source and purpose and everyone else and others, if you will.
Yeah.
So talk to us about these practices. Let's start with self.
Perfect. If you think about this for one moment, and I'm just going to get, I want to get a little bit metaphysical for a moment, and then I'm going to come back to the actual practice. We can go for weeks without food. We can go for days without water. We can go for only moments without air. And if you think about how conscious you are of your breath, the thing that without it, you would no longer be here. It is the thing that connects us to this life that we're living more at the root level than anything else that happens. How connected are we to our breath? How much do we know who we are? How intimate are we in our own relationship to the thing that keeps us alive? How does it change when we're happy? How does it change when we're aggravated? How does it change when we're agitated? How does it change when we're generous and thankful? Are we even aware of the patterns that the breath has? And I have a whole part of my work that actually focuses people on the four different breaths that are possible. But let's go back to what the practices are for a moment. And I want to also offer you another website that you can give to your people. It's themosaiconline.com, which actually focuses on the principles and the book itself. So it's themosaiconline.com. And on that website, you'll see that we have a Be Kind to You bracelet. And it's a 21 consecutive day challenge to see if you can be kind to yourself for 21 days. Watch your thoughts, watch your breath, watch what you eat, make a decision about what it is you want that you would do. How would you treat yourself if you were kind to yourself? We have learned through society to be kind to others. Beautiful practice. Unfortunately, we don't realize we're connected to those others that we're a part of, so we forget about being kind to ourselves. Mm. When we're kind to ourselves, everything changes. Because this is me, Richard, and I don't know about you or your listeners, but I found in the course of my life, 24/7, 7 days a week, I literally am taking my right hand and trying to hit myself with it, and my left hand is blocking it. I'm always putting myself down. I listened to one of your shows where you were talking about some people think they have to self-deprecate, but we put ourselves down all the time. We sabotage our efforts. We say we're going to go on a fast and we eat the next moment. We say we're going to be kind to somebody and lo and behold, we yell at them. We say we're going to treat ourselves and take that walk and we never take it. We do so many things that actually sabotage ourselves. What would happen if we were actually kind to ourselves? So the challenge is 21 days of kindness to ourselves. And what happens is there's a little rubber band bracelet that I put on. You start on it with your left hand and you watch. When you start realizing you're not being kind to yourself, you take it off of that wrist and you put it on the right wrist and you start over again. I've had the bracelet on for 6 weeks now. I've made it to day four twice. I've made it to day three twice. I've made it to day two five times. And I'm back on day one again today. Mm. And for me, it's not about getting to 21 days. In the past, I would be all about the result. I have to get to 21 days in 21 days. The process is more for me around watching, how do I really treat myself? How often, how many times a day do I knock myself down? Do I eat the wrong things? Do I treat myself with disrespect? How many times do I do that a day? And there are days when I've changed my bracelet 10 or 15 times a day. And becoming aware of that is starting to change the course of my life. Because when I symbolically am hitting myself all that much time, what's the natural tendency? I'm going to put up a wall around myself to protect myself. Mm-hmm. And that wall around myself to protect myself is so close to me. I've got about a 3-inch wall from head to toe all around me protecting me. So how much am I really connecting to the world? How much am I really allowing the world to experience me? How much am I really letting in or giving out? Because I'm completely guarded. When I start being kind to myself, that 3-inch wall can dissolve because I'm no longer hitting myself. I don't need to protect myself from my own assault. I can drop that wall. Hmm. And that allows me to do the second practice, which is be vulnerable. But I want to give you some space to see if you agree with this concept.
I actually do. And I have to say I think that initially anybody that would first start that 21-day process, if they're repeating day one over and over again, they could start to say, I don't know, this isn't worth it. I'm never going to get there, because they think that it's, as you said, got to get to day 21.
Yeah, but I would say as soon as they say I'm never going to get that, there, switch the bracelet.
And you switch the bracelet because right? you've already done that. Exactly. But here's right? what you've also said is very powerful, and that is, in order for you to know that it's time to switch the bracelet, you have to be awake.
Yes.
Yeah, you aware. Really have to be awake. And so many of us, of course, are not, for a myriad of different reasons. Now, I remember as well, and I had to go through the process myself of changing my perspective. And it took, you know, I've shared on this program that I really wasn't following the campaigns of 2016 until I got sucked in September of 2016. So I was free of it for about a year and 3 months, 4 months. And it took me 6 months to, as I say, get unsucked.
Yeah.
And then I got to a point where I was actually able to say out loud, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how I do not want to be or behave. And a few months later, I was then able to go to the next step for me, and that was, I forgive you, but more importantly, I forgive me. And I'm not kidding you, I actually have felt so much better. I was saying this at the front end of all of this stuff, of the campaigns, that, you know, karma's a, if you pardon me, folks, karma's a bitch. And that you cannot continue to do the things that you were doing, teacher, and not have it come back on you. And unfortunately, that is exactly what's happening in our time now. This has nothing to do with anything. This has to do with metaphysics. This has to do with for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And when we take a look at that in our own lives, again, we have to be awake. Let me ask you, is that bracelet that you are talking about, this 21-day program for self and connecting with self, A, I know it's available on your website, but
yes.
Is that something that has helped more so now? And you say you've only been wearing it, what, 6 months?
6 weeks.
6 weeks. Have you felt more awake?
Way. Because what happens is we go through life on autopilot, most of us do. And when we do a practice and when we challenge ourselves in something that actually has, like I can say I'm going to do a 21-day challenge of being kind to myself and try and do 21 consecutive days. And if I don't have a tool to use to help me in that practice, I just go on autopilot and I forget. Even with my bracelet on, there'll be times where I just forget it's there. But the more that I become aware of it, the more that I become aware of how I'm treating, forget about the bracelet, the more I become aware of how I'm treating myself, the more my walls can fall down, because really I spend most of my time protecting myself from myself. I spend most of my time making sure that I don't knock myself down. And so how far can I get in my business? How far can I get in my career? How far can I get in my relationships when all that's happening is my walls meeting your wall? And I paint my wall so beautifully, so you say, oh, you're a good guy. You have a pretty wall. But you haven't ever met me. I'm behind in a fetal position hoping you never see me.
I get you there. And sometimes that's where we want to be, just because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's what I want to address, if mm-hmm. I can, because I've heard you mention it a few times and we're going into murky waters here. So you direct me away from it if it's not what you want to talk about.
You go.
But it seems so current in what's happening and in the conversation that we're having. This political situation, the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump, it's as if we're living in two different realities.
Mm-hmm.
When you turn on CNN, you hear one thing about Trump. When you turn on Fox News, you hear a wholly different story. Somewhere in between is where the real truth lies. We're siloed in our thinking. There is not one side that is right and one side that is wrong. We are not a divided states of America. We are United States of America. And until we can come together and melt those silos and listen to what each other says. Hear what each other, hear the ways other people, we would resolve what we're doing. Figure out why we're saying what we're saying. Understand why we're saying. I just listened to something that's probably been around for a while, but it just crossed my consciousness. I saw an interview with Thich Nhat Hanh and Oprah. And they were talking about something called compassionate listening, deep listening. Mm. Thich Nhat Hanh is a Vietnamese monk. And what happened in the Vietnam War is some of the monks in Vietnam didn't believe in the war. And they were not being heard. So some monks in his order burned themselves, literally burned themselves alive, so that they would get heard. Remember our theory. Mm-hmm. If you speak and you don't get heard, you yell. If you yell and you don't get heard, you create a scene. If you create a scene and you don't get heard, you destroy something. Mm-hmm. He created a practice, or he spoke the practice that I practice, but he spoke it better than I do. So I want to give credit to him. What would happen if we actually listened? Listen from such a place of compassion that our listening was meant to say to you or to say to each other, I have no idea the suffering that you've gone through. I have no idea why you think the way you think, but I really want to know. Mm-hmm. And I know that some people may think that I'm going to use that to hurt you. I promise you, I will never do that. That is the farthest thing from my intention.
Yeah.
I really want to know what you believe. And then you just listen. Even if they attack what you believe, you still just listen. You don't rationalize. You don't defend. You just hold the space for them to free themselves of this anger and turmoil and unheardedness is what I'm going to say. I can't think of the right word. Mm-hmm. But of not being heard, you hold the space so that that space now contains all that was inside them that has brought them to this place of discontent and rage and anger and fight. And you just say, I love you. Mm. And as an act of compassionate listening, we just listen. If we want to have a conversation a month later, a week later, a day later, 5 days later, and explain to them what we feel, maybe that will happen, maybe it won't. But the beauty of a compassionate listening practice is it's not about being right. It's about holding the space for people to say what they need to say and get it off their chest.
You know, there's a practice in acting, and my acting coach back in Phoenix taught me this, a very dear friend of mine. I've known her for 40 years. And one of those practices is that when you go into a scene, especially one that's energetically charged,
yep.
Especially if you're going to, in the script, you're going to attack this person, right?
Yep.
You don't necessarily have to do this out loud verbally, but she had us do this. You would ask their permission to, if you will, to attack them.
Mm.
Now, because we're both actors, we are going to give our permission because we know this is just a script, this is just a scene. And then you go and do it. Another point that I found interesting, and this to me, that goes along with what you said about holding the space. There was a television program I was watching some years ago. It was called The Last Ship. And there was an episode where you had these two groups. There was the crew on the ship. This was a Navy ship. And then there was this group of people on an island. And the Navy ship had this remedy for whatever it was that ailed the folks on the island. But the islanders had been misinformed and abused and misused, et cetera, and they thought it was from the people from the Navy ship. So, you know, you have bullets flying everywhere. And darn near everybody on the island was wiped out except the last guy, the guy who was the head of the place. And they capture him, take him aboard the ship, and they're questioning him. And as he's talking, he's sharing with them what had happened. The captain is listening to him, right? I mean, really listening to him.
Yep.
begins to realize and then shares with the gentleman, the leader of the Islanders, that wasn't us. Mm-hmm. I know you say it was us, but that wasn't us. We've been out at sea, blah, 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 blah. As soon as that dialogue was finished, they joined forces and then moved on in the episode. And I thought, mm-hmm. wow, if mm-hmm. only they had done that before the yeah. bullets were flying,
yeah.
You would have had much, much less death. One other point I wanted to bring up too, and you talk about listening. I don't know if you remember this or not. When I first got into radio, and I was a public affairs director, and I was doing interviews about a wide variety of what they called problems, needs, and interests, I was told that I needed to make sure that I was able to get hopefully two sides to the story, or at least ask questions from both sides of the issue. Mm-hmm. And at the time I got into broadcasting, there was this law that said you had to do that. And in the early 80s, the president of the United States at that time abolished that law, mm-hmm. and it was called the Fairness Doctrine, that mm-hmm. said if you are going to have a conversation with someone about a subject, you have to talk about both sides. Now, when the Fairness Doctrine was abolished, now you have what we have today called echo chambers, the description mm-hmm. you gave earlier in the last segment about CNN silos. And Fox. Silos, exactly. Yeah. And I was actually talking with a very conservative person who actually was a Trump supporter. And I explained this to him. And I then asked him once I was finished with my explanation, which he kept nodding his head. Oh, yeah, yeah. I said, then you'd be in favor of bringing that back, wouldn't you? And he actually agreed. Mm-hmm. Because that would open up the dialogue mm-hmm. to discuss these issues from more than one side.
Totally. So let's go. Beautiful segue. I love that. I didn't know about that change, but you can, without knowing the change existed, watching the way society has evolved, watching the way news is delivered, I noticed the change, but I didn't know that was part and due to the fact that you could tell one side without telling another side. When we practice kindness, when we're kind to ourselves and we don't feel like we have to defend ourselves from ourselves, then we also feel like we don't have to defend ourselves from each other. And partly what that allows us to do is take walls down. And when you think about it, we live in silos. Silos thinking is walled thinking, right? Mm-hmm. We think like that lone wolf that looks for a like-minded community really found people that thought and felt like he did, like I did. And so I created my own silo. I built a place where everybody agreed with me or we challenged each other, but only within a certain context. In my mind, that was the death of innovation. We lost the ability to actually see what we can't see. As long as we continue to see what we're always looking at, we will never see the other things that are there. You know that picture that they show? I think they use it in psychology, but it's a black and white drawing. One way it looks like an old hag, and the other way it looks like a young socialite.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do, yeah.
And so at the first moment when you see that, like all of us have seen that picture enough, but there are millions of them that we haven't seen that the same phenomenon will exist. But after we've seen it long enough, we can go back and forth and see it. We can never see the same one at the same time. But when we see it for the first time, we see one image and we just can't for the life of us see the other until our perspective changes and we suddenly see something different. That to me is a symbolic of the world that we live in right now. When we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, which is the second practice, when we allow ourselves to mix with unlike minds, when we allow ourselves to hear what people who don't think like we think believe, we suddenly start to see there's another picture in the picture that we were looking at that we never saw. Mm-hmm. And in that place, I believe in a world where everything is possible, absolutely everything. The reason I can't do it yet is I just don't see the way to make it possible. But when I start to invite people who see the world differently from me into the world that I live in, who knows? What they see might be that piece that I was missing that makes what was once for me impossible now suddenly possible.
Well, and as I've shared before, that's James Redfield's concept as far as I've used the term, putting down my shields. And I use a Star Trek analogy that says that if the shields are up, we can fire weapons and we can be hit in the shields by others' weapons, but no messages get out and no messages come in. There is no connection.
So really what I want to do is look for, I'm 63 years old. For 45 years, I've been talking philosophy. What's happened in the last 3 years is I'm starting to live philosophy. And there's a big difference between talking our message and living our message. And I'm sure the people that are listening to this show are people who want to live the message. We cannot break silo thinking by staying in our silos. We cannot keep pointing and accusing other people of doing something wrong when we want to break those silos that believe that there's two sides that exist.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find that place. If you think of a mosaic, why is the image so exquisite to me? Because no piece in the mosaic is surrounded on four sides by another piece. That's not the way they're connected. So they're sometimes connected by one side, two sides, maybe. But sometimes there's just a very corner of one piece connects to the very corner of another piece. And still there's connection.
Yeah.
What that shows me is that all of us have some connection point that we can agree on that can help us build the bridge over the gap of our silos. It doesn't have to be, I agree with everything you say. Great. I don't care if you agree with everything I say. Can we find some agreement with everybody that allows us to become one nation again, one world again, one people again, rather than a divided, segmented society where everybody's blaming everybody else? And that leads me to the third purpose, to the third practice, if that's okay. Can I just keep going?
No, go right ahead. We've got plenty of time.
Okay. So the third practice that is to do what you came to do, to understand what is your purpose. When I ask people what they're here for, most people say, I don't know. I mean, like, what were you created for? I don't know. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
A few people say, well, this is what my purpose is. Great. I salute that. I'm so happy to finally hear somebody who knows why they're here. But if you don't know why you're here, every road you take will get you there.
That is true.
Right?
That is absolutely true.
But when you know why you're here, like even in this interview, okay, why am I really here? I want to help people understand that there's a new paradigm that's coming, that's a mosaic paradigm, not a vertical paradigm, not a paradigm where leadership's where teachers tell students what to do, leaders tell people what to do, one side tells the other what to do, but we're all, our collective consciousness, our connected understanding, our connected intelligence will take us to places we never knew before. That's my purpose in being here. It's also to sell a book. But if I get caught up in too many stories that take me onto all the branches of the tree, I'll never have a place where I reside in what my purpose is in every interaction that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're open enough and kind enough to ourselves that we can be open enough to other people's points of view, and when we know where we're going, we can purposefully get to that destination. We have GPS systems in our car right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty soon we'll have self-driving cars. We'll put our destination into our car. We'll sit back in our chair. We'll relax. And our car will take us exactly where we're going. It's an effortless process. The same thing is true with where we're going in the inner system of development, mm-hmm. in our inner minds. All we have to know is what our GPS system is. And we put our destination in, and it'll take us right there. Now, my GPS system sometimes lately doesn't reroute as much as it used to years ago, right? So sometimes I would go way out of my way and go, hold it, where the hell am I? But it would always get me to my destination. But now those have become so much better. The satellite work is so much better. once we know where we're going, all we have to do is put that destination in. But if you don't know where you're going, you don't know what your purpose is in anything that you're doing, you'll never get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
Because every place will be okay. And let me just get to the fourth point, and then what we can just the fourth point is, once I'm kind, once I understand that I live in a benevolent world where the world not only is not against me, it's here to support me. Once I then become vulnerable to that world and let that world enter me, which is practice two, once I know what my purpose is, then I'm kind, I'm vulnerable, I'm purpose-driven, I know where I'm going, then I can build my mosaic. Then I can find those people, not of like mind, but those people of unlike and like mind that have the same purpose in line, or that will help me get to my purpose, and that I can help them get to their purpose. And when you bring purposeful people together, that's what creates a revolution. That's what changes. Let's tie up the package. That's what changes the old paradigm of thinking into the new paradigm of thinking. And it's always been that way, that small groups of people come together with a purposeful destination that are vulnerable and understanding, and they change the world. The early adapters, those people that are the beginning of any movement. But that movement, if you think about the way our movements start today, they start with angry people. We don't want it. Me too. I love the movement. I'm so in favor of women being treated with respect, but not by angry people who say the way you're treating me is wrong. Why isn't it just enough to say we all need to be respected?
Mm-hmm. I was to that point. I was interviewing a woman in India a few months back, and we actually were talking about this very subject, the Me Too movement and so forth. And I shared with her, I said that, you know, I understand why women are walking around and they're afraid of men walking by. But I got to tell you, there are men that are walking around, too. They don't want to get anywhere near or look the wrong way, because the next thing you know, there'll be accusations. To which she replied with great attitude, and I understood it, "Join the club," she said.
Right.
And I go, whoa, easy.
Right. But even that, if I can say it, I worked in a big company where a woman was the owner. She did the same abuses that a man would do in power. It isn't a masculine feminine dichotomy. It's people in power thinking that they have the right to use their power to do things that are not right to other people that they have power over. And so for me, it isn't a sexual thing. It's a power-driven thing where we get to a certain place where really good people start to believe the press clippings about them, and they start to believe they're someone else. And I worked at Hay House for a long time, and I watched beautiful, beautiful people become really big assholes. Mm. They only wanted green M&Ms in their waiting room.
Yeah.
Right? Because they believed that they had. So the mosaic for me, to just like try and tie some things up here, the story of the mosaic, I used to be a snob. It's amazing to me that I would write a story about common, ordinary people. Because I always only wanted to associate with high vibration people. I always wanted to only eat in high vibration restaurants. I only always wanted to do this. For me to write it, God must have the biggest laugh going on, because I wanted to be in a monastery, away from everything. And for me to talk about connection and to see the beauty of every single human being is crazy. But what I wanted to do is I want to come back to a celebration of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to ask, I ask people on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being what you don't want and 10 being what you want, absolutely want, where does the word ordinary sit? Most people, 95% of them, say a 1 or a 2. When I ask them, where's the word extraordinary come? They say a 10, without exception. So I ask them, and it might be only a play of the English language, why do you want to be extra of something you don't want to be? If ordinary is something you don't want to be, why do you want to be extraordinary?
Mm,
and everybody looks at me and says, well, you don't understand it. That's not the way really what I was talking about. But that's what the English language is.
Yeah.
Right? It's just that. And so what for me, the meaning of extraordinary, of how we create extraordinary things, is when extraordinaries come together. We were never meant to be superheroes and do this on our own. We were meant to come together as a community of people, as a one people, one as a United States, and come together, all of us together, to create extraordinary things. When extraordinaries come together, they create extraordinary situations.
Well, it falls right into the analogy I have that if the good Lord had intended for us to live solitary lives, I will bet you, and you would probably agree, that there are enough M-class planets in the universe that 7.6 billion of us could occupy a single planet. But guess what the reality is? 7.6 billion people are on this planet. And totally. That says to me, in a logical brain of mine, that we're here to work together. And yes, we're connected, but we're here to work and play and create together.
And it's in your theme song. It's in the break. It's how you enter the show. Tell me your story and I'll do my best to listen to it. I don't have it exactly the words because I just heard it here, right? But you probably know what it is. And if we would just take time to listen to each other, the connection that we would build with this world would be so much greater than if we just judge each other and just talk over each other and yell at each other and think that we're better than the other people. What could be more beautiful than a sunrise? And a sunrise is ordinary. Mm-hmm. It happens every single day. What's more beautiful than watching the buds of spring develop after the cold winter? Mm. And it's ordinary. It happens every year. What's more beautiful than the sunset at night and day follows night and night follows day? It's ordinary. What's more beautiful than a mountain by the and sitting by an ocean? A mountain doesn't want to be the ocean, and the ocean doesn't want to be the mountain. It's ordinary to be who we are, but we live under this myth mm-hmm. that we have to be more than we are. We have to be extraordinary, and that desire to be extraordinary creates a self-loathing because we never live up to what we expect ourselves to be. Mm. And that self-loathing makes us not like ourselves, which comes back to the simple basic practice of practice one. Be kind to yourself. You don't have to do it all. Join together. We are in a different time. We're in a time where the old paradigm is not working.
Yeah.
So what I'm looking for now is people that want to be a part of that new paradigm. People that want to change the way they do their businesses, change the way they live in their relationships, change the way they function with their community, change the way they affect the world, and come together. That's what I. If people have interest in that, let's start to have dialogue. Bring me in to speak. Bring me in to work with your team. Bring me in to do the things that we can do, because I'll be invisible. And in the end, this is what I'll guarantee you. People will hear each other. People will feel more connected. People will be a part of something much greater. People will trust each other more. People will have more respect for each other. People will fight each other less and listen more. And there will be something that happens that is unbelievable. Because together we can do way more than we can on our own.
Isn't that the truth?
And it's simple.
Yeah. I mean, it isn't complicated. It never has been. We've made it complicated. Yep. We have absolutely made it complicated. Well, Danny, I have to say that to me, this is great stuff. Another one of my analogies is that we have a lifeboat that will actually hold 7.6 billion people. Okay?
Yep.
But there's a catch. In order to get on this lifeboat, you have to be willing to let go of the old ways of thinking, because we're not taking those with us. And what you're talking about is not, it's old, but it's not. I mean, it's not something that's been used. We need to dust it off and start using it in the context of the mosaic.
It's as old as time.
And yeah.
I'll just leave you with one more blueprint that is so simple and so easy and so powerful. And it's the blueprint of change. When we realize that our thoughts become our words, and our words create our stories, and our stories make up our life, we have a formula that if we're not happy with any part of that equation, If we change any part of that equation, everything changes. If we're not happy with where our life is, we can change the stories that we say to create our life, which means we can change the words that we use to tell our stories, which means we change the thoughts that we have. And in changing those thoughts, words, stories, and life, we bring a new paradigm in that is coming, that is ours to accept. And that's what has to happen. We will either be a part of the new paradigm or left behind in the old paradigm. It's our choice.
The Mosaic. It's an extraordinary tale about the absolutely ordinary. It is an invitation to those who feel disconnected to reconnect again, to those who feel broken, to know they are whole, and to help us realize that what we see is not what is, but only what we see. And it is the Mosaic we're talking about. Daniel Bruce Levin is my guest. Danny, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. And two things. Number one is, should you find yourself a little further north of where you live now, up here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
I would love that. I will come up to be with you. I would love to just meet you, sit with you, be with you. I love what you're doing and the work you're doing. And I would love to see this as a beginning, not an end.
Absolutely. And I do see this as a beginning. And also let our listeners know that in addition to the website, which is danielbrucelevin.com, there's also the mosaiconline.com. You've got all kinds of great stuff that people can take advantage of. And I actually wanted to let our listeners know real quickly here that you've of course, have the Mosaic Archetype card deck, as well as El Mosaico, the Mosaic audiobook, which you recorded, your voice, which would be wonderful to listen to, the newsletter, the online course. You have retreats as well as workshops. And again, it's either Daniel Bruce Levin or that's .com or themosaiconline.com. And Danny, I want to again thank you so much. And before we let you go, I have three final questions for you. And I really do appreciate you giving us so much time today.
It's my pleasure. And before we get to those three questions, if you don't mind.
Please.
For the first five people from this show that contact me, I want to send them the Be Kind to You bracelet as a gift.
Oh, so wonderful.
So we can get this practice going. First five people contact me, get the Be Kind to You bracelet.
Tell me your story in the subject line, folks. All right. That's that way he knows where it's
right.
Coming from. So first question is, who is Daniel Bruce Levin?
Wow. He's the same guy that's always been. He is someone who saw the world differently, who looked at the world in a way that made him feel isolated and alone. And it was only later that when I realized that the way I saw the world actually became a sought after commodity by corporations and governments who wanted to innovate because they were tired of seeing the world the way they see it. And he is always been the same, but that it was not a person that's changed, but a perspective that's changed. And when we change our perspective, everything in our life changes.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Big questions. Wow. These were not like small little questions at the end though, that we just throw. my dream, seriously, and people, I think we started this out by saying that people call me crazy all the time. My dream is to honestly reconnect a disconnected world. We live in the most connected time the world has ever known. We know what's happening 10,000 miles away within minutes, seconds of the time that it happens, and yet we don't know our next door neighbor. Mm. We don't even know ourselves. Mm. And so when we get, my dream is for us to reconnect, to become a united world, to become the United States, to become a united in the consciousness of an individual, for us to learn how to reconnect back to who we are, to the source that created us, to the purpose of that we're here to do, and to each other. That's my dream.
And final question, which actually taps into one of the four points of connection, is What is your life's purpose?
When I was at Hay House, I was director of business development there, and I helped the company grow from $3 million a year to $100 million a year in revenue. I had the beautiful opportunity to meet a lot of really well-known people, people that helped millions of people's lives. One of the things that I saw in meeting them and spending time with them and having the chance to enjoy them was the books that they wrote were not the books that they knew. They were the books they most needed to read. The Mosaic is the book that I most needed to read. It's the book that re-explains to me and to anyone who is interested how to reconnect to the life that we're living. We are so disconnected. And my purpose here, and for myself, is to unify that disconnection, to realize that everything is the same, to realize that I am one being, not many beings, to realize that you and me, Richard, are breathing the same air, breathing the same energy, a part of the same world, a part of the same universe. When we look at the stars and we see the distance in them, we think, wow, they're so far away, but they're part of the same galaxy. That's how we are. And my goal is to know that, not just talk about it.
Well, once again, Danny, thank you so much for joining us on the program. And we do look forward to having you back on later in 2019 to continue this conversation, because there is so much more that we can talk about. And we're going to encourage people to go to the website, themosaiconline.com, and also check out the book, The Mosaic. And it is available certainly through the website, but also, I'm sure, on Amazon and all of the other wonderful outlets.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, thank you again. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.